Hello.
Hey there. I'm here to see Michelle Osterhout.
Okay, and what's your name?
Christina Wood.
Christina Wood?
Yeah.
Let's see if she's ready for you.
Yep.
Christina Wood, here to see Michelle. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, go ahead. You know where you're going to?
No idea.
I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bruce.
And there's your office.
Hi.
Is that okay?
Yes, please. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here. Let's come on in and have a conversation.
All right.
This is From Here, stories from people and about people in the Catskill Mountains. My name is Michelle Osterhout, and this is my story. Mostly grew up in Jefferson and Oneonta, New York. Went to elementary school in Jefferson, then moved to Oneonta, New York, middle of fifth grade. Did attend kindergarten in Alabama. My dad was in the service, so we traveled around quite a bit. I consider Jefferson and Oneonta both my homes. My fondest memories of childhood are in Jefferson. My great-grandparents bought the farm in 1939, so it's been in our family for quite some time. And then my grandparents moved up from Long Island in the late 50s, early 60s. And after my dad was in the service, but we settled in Jefferson as a family. My mom, my sister, and I lived with my grandparents in Jefferson. And that's where I remember running barefoot in the woods, sitting on the stone wall waiting for the school bus. And that's where I remember like fond childhood memories and love and family, being with my grandparents. We had dinner every night with my grandparents. We had, you know, food from the garden. My grandmother was like my rock, and my grandfather was the older man in our life who just made us feel so special. And I think that honestly, one of the most important things about growing up in a mixed family and being in the Catskills and living with my grandparents for that really important part of my childhood was that, and my sister will say this too, not only my uncle, but my grandparents, and I'm talking about my grandparents right now because that's who we lived with. They taught us that no matter who you were, you could be loved by anybody of any color or any background, because my grandparents were white. We lived with my white grandparents, my mother's parents. And that was the family we knew. We weren't very close to my father's parents because they were down south and he was in the army in the service traveling for much of the first 12 years of my life. So my connection to family was my white family in the Catskills in New York. Okay, so in rural upstate New York, you don't have the opportunity. So I can see the juxtaposition of living in Oneonta and living in Jefferson. In Oneonta, I live near downtown, we can go places, but the primary part of my childhood was spent in Jefferson. And so didn't have a lot of connection with friends, had friends, not a ton of connection with friends. I was that kid outside running in the woods, running in the fields. My grandpa would take the wood wagon in the woods and chop trees, and my sister and I would sit on it. We'd do crazy stuff in the back of the wood wagon. And reading. My grandparents were avid readers, both of them. And so I learned to love books early on, and my grandparents had a library in their house, and so I was reading all the time. I would say probably poetry was my first love, and only because when I started to read, I just would grab anything off the shelf that I could read. So this one poetry book, I just remember it really well because it reminded me of where I lived, because it was poems about the country. So you could catch me outside just sitting on the lawn or sitting by a tree reading books. So that was my connection to the world, was reading. We did do the summer program, so we would go to Minekill. And so I remember very fondly, that was awesome. Couple summers we went to Vacation Bible School. Down the road from us lived the Shrumps, and I don't know, I think we did it two summers. But Minekill sticks out in my head, and then a couple times we did like a soccer camp, and that might have been through Minekill as well. By the end of fifth grade, we moved to Oneonta, so I didn't have a lot of activities. A couple sleepovers with friends, but there were two black families in Jefferson at the time. It was my sister and I, and then my friend Stephanie and her, it's her cousin, but she calls her sister, Jaria. we've kept the house almost exactly like it was when they were there. So we close it during part of the year, but then we open it in the spring and it's open through the fall. My aunt is really she owns the property now. My mom has a little piece of the property. We all use the property. So it looks exactly like it did when I was a child, which is amazing because I go there and I'm taken back into time. But so when I think of Jefferson and the farm, I think of the farmhouse and I think of the smells and the things that I associate with a farmhouse, but I have to share this story with you. This is how awesome my grandparents were. So my grandfather used to get up in the morning before us and he would go in the woods. And so we had a trail, like we would go all the time in the wood wagon with him. He had a tractor, an old 1949N Ford tractor that still is in the family. And he had a wood wagon hooked to the back of the tractor. And when he'd go up in the woods, my sister and I would sit in the back of the wood wagon and we'd just be crazy in the back of the wood wagon. But he would stop along the way. So we had all these paths in the woods and he would stop along the way and we'd stop at a tree. And the tree was a lollipop tree. My grandfather would take lollipops to trees. And I kid you not, forever, I thought that lollipops grew on trees. Yes, that was my grandpa. And so when we lived in Germany, when my dad was in the service, he would send us lollipop seeds. I don't know whatever happened to him, but I mean, I was too little to even know, but he would send us little cute little cards. Like here's what I'm gonna tell, he loved us so. And that's what I remember, you know, like, he was just awesome. And my grandmother the same way. She was our caregiver. My mom worked during the day. So when we'd come home from school, we'd be with my grandma. My mom worked a lot on the weekends. She worked construction for a while. We'd be with my grandma. But we just had free reign of the woods. We had free reign of like over 200 acres and this beautiful property with, you know, trails. And like, that's what I remember, is romping in the woods and the lollipop tree and my grandmother hunched over in her huge garden. We never bought produce, right? So it wasn't a working farm, like we didn't have the cows or the horses or the chickens when we lived there, that, you know, but my grandmother still gardened, my grandfather chopped his own wood. Like, that's what I remember. So a lot of our neighbors have moved on. And so there's lots of people from downstate who have property and they come up in the summer. And so, yeah, it's changed. And that's sad because that familiarity of your, like, knowing your neighbors, you know, like my first little job was on Coach Hotelling's farm and I like weeded the garden or something, right? And I think he paid me in bubble gum. Like, it was just like silly stuff, like packs of gum. And I think maybe he gave me some money too. And I didn't have that job for very long, but it was just like one summer I weeded his garden a couple times. And like, I knew everybody. Like, we could walk around our block and we would stop at Cleo Moore's because maybe my grandmother had something to drop off at Cleo Moore's, or they saw us outside and they'd invite us in. I remember one time we went to Cleo Moore's, and he's long gone, but anybody in Jefferson would know who Cleo Moore is because he was the one who renovated the schoolhouse. It was on our property, then his property, then we moved it to town. I remember being invited in for peach cobbler. I'd never had peach cobbler. Like, those are the old time like memories that you have of like either small town or living in the country. And just all those people have moved on. So any familiarity I have with people who live around us is gone. So that's kind of sad because we don't know. There's one fella, an artist who bought adjacent property that was our property. He bought it off of our family, John Jackson. So like he's like the one person who's still there, you know? And he's just really close to our families. And then Mark Hodges, whose parents used to own Hodges and Hodges Pond up the road from us. He still comes up and has Thanksgiving, and like we have family get-togethers and they're invited because they're like family.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what's changed, is I don't recognize people anymore. And it's been 40 years, so I probably wouldn't anyway, but there's just a few people left. I chose this job because it reminded me in some ways like home. Like, it's a small community, it's rural, and I like that. It's actually crazy diverse for such a small community. This Margaretville is. And it's close to home and it feels like home. Like, and I felt, so here's the thing, I always felt accepted as a child. Although the first racism I ever experienced was in Jefferson on the bus and somebody said the N-word and I'm like, well, they had to be referring to, and they didn't know that I heard. And then when I looked at them and we caught eyes, it was an older classman. It was just so awkward. I'm like, oh my God. But, you know, the draw, like, I'm a country girl, you know, like, and I feel like I'm fortunate because in a way I'm a little bit worldly because we've traveled because my parents, so I've experienced things, but like, I love the country. I love rural. And I've been, for the most part, I've always felt accepted. I understand that there are people who don't necessarily understand everything about people of color, and they may ask questions or they may have certain biases, but I also understand that that's their schema, right? That's just all they know. So it's really important, and I've come to this conclusion at almost 50, at 50 years, before I turned 50, that like, it's most people do want to get to know you and do want to give you a chance. They can't help that they were brought up in a way, or they haven't experienced a lot of people of color, or a lot of people who are just different. And so I found that by having conversations, you know, we have a lot more in common than we think we do or thought we might originally did. And that's like, the love for me is I just love getting to know people. I love people. So trying to break down that barrier, or what we think might be a barrier, is really important to me. People will see me and have a bias, right? And then they come and they sit and talk to me, and they see me holding a big bass in my picture, or they see a picture of me on my four-wheeler. And I'm not saying that you can't look like me and do those things, but there's automatically a bias or a perception about what we look like or what we do. How sometimes that's hard when you're a person, when people have expectations or thoughts about you, right? And you're very aware of that. So like, maybe I didn't embrace country music right away because, you know, maybe it's not really cool amongst my community and parts of my family or places where I've been, right? So it's interesting. So I've always taught from a social justice lens, first of all. That's always been, and as an English teacher, you have more of the space to do that through literature. So that's my jam. And I've been, at, you know, pretty involved in my community for quite some time. So I always bring that into the classroom. But I guess I think it's really important for people of color. So I can go to Binghamton, I can go to Albany, I can go to New York City and get a job, right? They don't necessarily need me. So when I say need, the kids in those urban areas will see people that look like them. So to me, it's really important to, first of all, this is home. This feels like home. But I think it's really important for kids to see a woman and a black woman in the classroom in a leadership role. So, you know, my end game, so many people were like, even when I was going through my superintendent development program, people were like, well, if you really want to find a leadership position, you should look to Long Island, or you should look to, you know, Westchester, like downstate. I'm like, but that's not where I live, and that's not where I raise my kids, and my family's here. Like, family is the most important thing to me. I'm never going to leave this area and be away from my mom or my aunts and my uncles. Like, I need to be close to my family, and I need to be like within half an hour driving distance. That's priority for me. And same with my husband's family. We all live in this area. So it was really easy for me to want to stay. I would say that there probably have been some people, like, I have not gotten job opportunities because I'm a woman and because I'm a woman of color. I know that. And because I'm pretty known in the community as a social justice advocate, and that can turn people off, right? Although, usually when they meet me, they're surprised at how conservative I actually am. I'm pretty conservative. I'm pretty patriotic, having grown up in a military family. So there's that, like, I wouldn't say conflict within myself. Like, I'm pretty self-assured of who I am right now. But I think people are like, wow, that's your belief on that, but you're in the NAACP, or you're this, or you know, you're in the Human Rights Commission. Yeah, because those are my values, right? It doesn't change my values. And I felt right away very welcome here. Like, just so you know, like, I wouldn't be in a job where I didn't feel comfortable and I didn't feel there was a fit. Jobs, like, it's all about fit. This is a fit. I fit with the board. I think it was enticing that I'm a woman of color too. They wanted diversity. They value diversity. And I fit with the community. I can, you know, one of my most comfortable places to go sit down at the diner and have coffee or have lunch, right? And I spark up a conversation and it just feels comfortable. But that's also who I am. My own personal growth has come from being vulnerable, right? Afraid of the stigma of whatever I might be going through or facing at the time, and just pushing through that. And it's made me a stronger leader. And I think it's made me a more credible leader and teacher, educator. So even just as, and I'm gonna get real vulnerable with you right now. Last year, I took some time off of work for my mental health. And I did share that story with one other colleague, and he reached out to me. I was a guest in a class, and he reached out to me and he said, you know what, thank you, because I thought I was alone. So there are so many people. And so now I feel really empowered to share my story. You know, you're worried about people thinking you're weak, or that you're not strong, or that you can't handle the job. Yeah. I want people to feel comfortable to be themselves and to be vulnerable with me. And I start that by being vulnerable about myself. So we have probably been to a concert a month for the past 2 years almost. The pandemic is to blame. So lots of idle time at home. It really started sitting outside in our backyard, chimenea going in the evenings, and my husband and I sipping wine and just enjoying each other's company. So that's how it started. And we started listening to different music. And I'm not even sure how it happened. I think we were camping. Actually, no, we were camping and somebody was playing Luke Bryan. And it was his new album at the time. And I'm like, ooh, this is catchy, I like it. and my son started listening to country music with his friends because he likes fishing and four-wheeling and all that country stuff, the stuff that you love to do in the country. And his friends listen to country. So he kind of introduced us to Morgan Wallen and some other music. And so my husband and I just started listening to it. And when things started to open up, I think it was June of 2021, I want to say, yeah, June of 2021, we were like, you know what, we really like this Luke Bryan guy. Let's go see him in Syracuse. Let's go do it. And so we sprung for expensive pit tickets at Syracuse, the amphitheater. And my husband and I went to this concert. You know, we've been to other concerts. Like, I've seen Earth, Wind & Fire. They're my favorite band. I love me some Earth, Wind & Fire. I've seen Tony Bennett. I've seen Mary J. Blige. That's my girl. But when we went to this concert, like, I was smitten. My husband was smitten. We were just like, this is fun. And it was also about the people. The people waiting in line for the concert, like it's an all-day event, because when you're in the pit, you get there early so you can get a good spot in the pit, and they give you a number so you can be the first one in the line. It was just about the people that we met and the good times that we had. And it didn't matter, like, I wasn't thinking, you know, in the past I might have thought, oh, it's country music, like, I'm not supposed to be here. People are going to be thinking it's weird, there's a black girl at the country music show. I really thought that. Like, how silly is that? But I thought, I think it was weird. And truth be told, there were not a lot of black folks there. There weren't. We had such a good time that I was able to, like, not even think about that. And so then it just started from there. We kept going to concerts. So the Daily Star was looking a couple years ago for some voices from people in the community that are underrepresented, right? And so as the NAACP, we put it out there and not a lot of people were biting. And I'm like, I really love to write. Maybe I'll put in for it. And, you know, if nobody else does it, they'll choose me and I'll get lucky. But whoever the editor of the paper was at the time, she reached out and she's like, we'd like you to be our regular columnist. I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, what's the topic? She goes, you'll write about whatever you want. Sign me up. So I've written about country music. I've written about civil discourse. I've written about racism. I've written about everything because they don't care. They just let me write about whatever I want. So I love writing. It's cathartic for me. It's therapeutic for me. When I went through a difficult time last year with my mental health, I wrote about that. It's just me being able to be my authentic self through story, and they let me do it. And I'm just so fortunate. And I don't claim to be a good writer. I just claim to love writing, you know? And I do get nice feedback. People seem to enjoy my writing. So it's something I like to do. My husband is like, you're writing another article, whether it's for the paper or for a journal, or I wrote a chapter in a book. Like, I just love it. A dream for me is to go on a writing retreat where no one bothers me. I just have my laptop and my iPad and I write. I feel like it's almost like self-reflection, and it's to anybody who needs to hear maybe what I'm going through. Like, I try to share my story to connect to other people that might be having the same. So when I tell you, like, that person who reached out to me when I shared my story about last year and how it was a struggle for me, and that's my goal. My goal is that anybody who might not be comfortable telling a story or sharing an experience, that maybe they can see something through that, and then it'll help them. So usually there's like a topic or something that's come up that I'm interested in. So my last article that I just submitted was about being your authentic self. So that was coming out of the Hardy concert, and he's got, you know, this song. He's got a couple of songs. One of them sold out, about not being a sellout. One of them is The Mockingbird and the Crow. The Mockingbird is like the person that does everything that society expects you to do. But he started off as the Mockingbird, and now he's the Crow. And then the other one is Unapologetically Country as Hell. So you get the theme, right? So like coming out of that concert, I'm like, ooh, this would be something great to write about, being unapologetically yourself. So I find muses all around me, and I don't know when they're gonna hit. And when something just strikes me, I'm like, I could write about that. I'll be in a conversation, and I'm like, oh, and I'll jot that down. I talk fast, and ideas come into my head faster than I can write them down. So I oftentimes will speak my articles. And that's what I love about this process, because I'm not like confined to a topic. So whatever I'm feeling, you know, like if you look at my articles, they're all over the place. Civil discourse, racism, country music, three of the best country music singers. Like, I feel like that's my artistic expression. So there have been times when I'll be either driving home from here or driving home from Albany, because I have a lot of conferences and things in Albany. Like, if I'm ever have an opportunity to pass by Jefferson, it's not unusual for me to just stop by there and just, sometimes I'm just there for half an hour, like just to be in that space, because it kind of grounds me. I feel like my grandparents are still there. I feel like it's just a really happy place. Like, there's a spot at the top of our tree field where you can go to the top of this tree field, and I usually ride my four-wheeler up there because I'm just lazy. I don't want to walk all the way up. And just sit at the top of this tree field, and you can see the mountains. You can see the Catskill Mountains, and I'm like, this is it. This is it. From Here is a Get Woke Catskills production and is made possible with generous support from the New York State Council on the Arts and the Roxbury Arts Group.
No other school like you.
You'll always,
always
be.
Yeah. We'll admit you made a hit all of our school days through.
You'll always, no? Okay, see, I don't know it all.
In every way we hope and pray that you will always, always be in our memories.
Dear old JCS.
Okay, that's recorded.
Oh, they. Oh, my gosh.